continue. 8 minutes after eight here on a Tuesday. The president made his pretty significant speech yesterday. And joining us on the Ubaldi Reports is Master Gunnery Sergeant John Ubaldi, United States Marine Corps, retired. And Master Guns, first of all, good morning. Merry Christmas.
And Merry Christmas. We can say that now. Merry Christmas and good morning.
You know, I always said it. You know, it's not like you have to be a genius to figure out that you could still say Merry Christmas, you know. And if they're not Merry Christmas people, then just say Happy Holidays. Right? I mean,
I agree. I mean, it just seems like we got to get into this political. It's a religious holiday. It's Christmas.
Yeah, it's a Judeo
Merry Christmas. If you're not Christian, hey, fine.
Happy holiday. Yeah, I mean,
happy whatever you believe in.
Right. You know, and so I yeah. I mean, I think if you ever had Jewish friends, they don't celebrate Christmas. Okay, and so you're sensitive to that unless you're an idiot. But I think what happened was institutions said, well, we can't be inclusive if we allow Merry Christmas to be a greeting. Okay.
Well, but I think what it came down to, they come back to the separation of church and state. What it meant is the government can't tell support one religion over another. Didn't say anything about anything else. It just misread what that separation of church and state meant.
We struggle. We struggle mightily, you know, when it comes to just. I will tell you this: we struggle mightily when it comes to, you know, I mean, even historical markers. That are religious in nature. You know, the cross in San Diego is one of the great ones, put up after World War II to commemorate the loss of life in the Pacific on the top of Mount Soledad. There's been people that have been trying to rip that thing down forever. It's like, are you kidding me? You know, and I call it the tyranny of the minority. You know, in this country, majority rules, minority rights. And at times, the minority gets a little bit over its skis. Like, look, we include you, we respect you, all right? But don't try to break it off in our ass, okay? Because somebody's going to get pissed.
I would have wholeheartedly agreed on that one.
But that's to me what you see a lot is minority trying to, and sometimes, you know, sometimes people do things that aren't right, and then, you know, as a minority, you got to go fight for what's yours and all of that. But, you know, anyway, we won't get distracted a whole lot.
No, we won't.
So, your thoughts on the major, first of all, anything new in the president's speech? He gives this kind of speech pretty early in his tenure, you know.
Correct.
You know, so,
well, from the background, from what I heard this morning from General Keane, he was the former vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs, and he mentioned that only a few people were involved in this. So my guess is probably John Kelly was definitely involved in this and a few other people. But Trump just reiterated what he said on the campaign trail. He stuck to four key themes. One, he's going to protect the American homeland, American people, promote American prosperity. And he really dialed in on that one, preserve peace through strength, and advance American influence. So this is pretty much what he said all along. He just now committed it to paper. And he just really stuck to the theme. Now, the one thing that he really articulated, and I've read the other themes by, you know, George Bush and Barack Obama, but he really pushed hard on promote American prosperity is the signature effort of what made America great is the prosperity of this country. And when we prosper, the world was prospering.
The first of all, so give me themes in the speech. major themes. Overall major theme is America first?
Exactly. He definitely put America first. Now, what people are missing, that he thinks America first harkens back, we want to be isolationist. He didn't say that, and he definitely reiterated in the street, because Americans, we're going to look after America, but we're also going to be, don't push us around, we're going to be back on the world theme. He repudiated what Barack Obama's theme was, America needs to lead from behind, let other actors on the scene, like when President Obama mentioned that it's not a bad thing to have Iran as a regional power broker in the Middle East. Well, Trump threw that under the bus and said, oh, we're not doing that. He put Russia, China, and Iran on notice. Don't push us around. We're not leaving the scene. We're going to be involved with our allies, and we're going to be involved around the world. Our influence is going to be around the world.
Okay. All right, so America first. The next bullet that I wrote down was the link between the Department of Defense and the economy. That both he made the point, I would say, a number of times about the need to revitalize the DOD, and by having a military that nobody would mess with, you would prevent war in the future. He went on to say, and you can't do that without being an economic superpower, and that the days are gone where the United States is essentially underwriting the world's security. Japan, right? You know, maybe we should have Japan, you know, transfer whatever they don't have to spend for a military to us, and we can use that to offset the debt. And we can do that with the Philippines. And we can do it with all the nations around the world whose security we guarantee. And so then we can say, hey, well, you know, we're cash rich. We can throw all these trillions of dollars that we get from these other nations being able to not have a military. We can throw that at this problem that we have. So talk about that link between the DOD and the economy. He seemed to hammer that throughout the speech.
He went a little further than others. I remember in 2011, then Chairman of the Joint Chiefs Admiral Mullen said that kind of the same theory, not allies do more, but he goes, without a strong economy, you can't do the things that we need to do with the Department of Defense. Robert Gates, who was Secretary of Defense under both Bush and Obama, told our allies, hey, guys, you guys got to start doing more. President Trump just went a little bit further and said, hey, come on, allies. You don't just rely strictly on only the United States. You guys got to do more for your military. I mean, we'll be there, but don't just rely solely on us. And it kind of is a theme that Ronald Reagan pushed, you know, peace through strength, but a strong economy means a strong America abroad. We can't do the things without a strong, vibrant U.S. economy.
You know, it's one of the things I've never understood about the whole liberal thing, and that is this. If you want to have all these social programs, how do you pay for it? You got to have an economy that's throwing off enough revenue that allows you to spend on those. But when you choke down business to the extent, you know, like cities like Chicago did, and the United States is chugging along at 1% growth in gross domestic product, you know, that's, you got to look at yourself and say, what are we doing here? We're liberals, but we need the business community in order to be liberals. You can't choke it off and spend like crazy too. It fiscally, it doesn't work. It doesn't work like that. So it's one of the financial things I've never understood about liberals is that they're not more pro business, because to me, you know, if I want to be a liberal, I got to be in bed with business. And sometimes I do have to compromise, because when this economy goes, the money it throws off is ungodly. Absolutely positive ungodly.
But see, I think, Mike, the liberals failed to realize, I mean, they championed John Kennedy. he had two periods. He did one thing, and then he realized this wasn't working, and he was pretty much the last, literally the last Democratic president that pushed a tax cut.
Yeah, but listen to Kennedy, and he sounds like a Republican. You listen to his speech on taxes, and you're like, that's a Democrat? That's a Republican. Speech now. And if you listen to Bannon's economic nationalism, it sounds like a straight up. It sounds like a Democratic speech. It's about jobs. It's about the American worker. It's about restoring that American worker. It's about keeping industry here. It's about all these, you know, nationalistic themes, and you're listening to it going, thinking, and this is a Republican. This used to be the fair of the Democrat, but no more.
You're right, but see, the thing is, liberals also have this philosophy that if you listen to the tax cut debate, minus what anybody thinks from an ideological standpoint, they always stress the wealthy need to pay their fair share. The wealthy need to pay their fair share. It's always a redistribution of wealth from this person to this person. Barack Obama said it and didn't get much play in 2008 on the campaign trail talking to a business owner. Well, we need to take from you to give to somebody else. Well, my father had only a fifth grade education. He told us, if you want to get ahead, ask that person who made it, how did you do it? He never once said, take from this guy to give to this guy.
Yeah, but, you know, we've been doing that, John, for forever. I mean, and it is. It's in a democracy, you know, that there's certain levels of taxation that are, you know, that are levied on everybody. And it is. It's income redistribution. And if you look at who pays what in this country, and it said, you know, for instance, the debate for the tax cut, it's like, well, the middle class needs more. They're not paying that much. The people that are paying all the taxes in this country, they're not middle class. And just go look it up, you know?
Well, look at your state. Look at the state of California. The top percentage are paying the vast majority of the taxes. If anything happened to that top percentage, your state is done.
Well, let me tell you, states like, you know, and they tend to be democratically controlled, big social program states are going to be hurt by this tax bill, and that was, you know, the state and local tax deductions that got tinkered with, right? And I'm waiting to see the final version of what happened. But
no, I'm staying here. Right. No, there was one thing that was interesting that Trump said in the economic part that I thought was really interesting. He said he wanted to reform how government spends its money. The country has never did a 21st century overhaul how government spends. I got a case in point. My younger brother was a captain in the fire department. He went to his city, wanted to spend $200 million on the homeless. So he asked me, so John, what should I ask? And well, first of all, what's causing the problem? So we asked the mayor that, and the mayor goes, well, it's a complicated problem. Well, then the next question was, well, if you're going to spend all this, what are you currently doing, and has anybody evaluated those programs to see if they're working or not working, or what is somebody else doing? And it's always, we have antiquated systems in our government. Now, we both came from the military. Look at our computer system. They're like a joke. And then we have a different supply system than the Army, and then it's just a mess how government spends its money. They need to do a 21st century government reform and really look how and audit how these government organizations, agencies, and programs work.
Okay. All right.
And that's where you reduce the debt.
And the DOD, I don't know that you'll reduce the debt doing that. You'll do some accounting stuff. You're not going to – when you don't talk to me about efficiencies. When people say efficiencies, it's not enough. Right? Now, you know, maybe you'll find, you know, what Harry Reid did, and you'll say, somebody will say, hey, what is this? I think by and large, our government is, I don't want to say efficient, but I think there's a lot of misnomers. I experienced this at the city level. People would, you know, how are you going to, efficiencies, we're going to go through the budget, we're going to weed stuff out. And then by the time you go through the budget, what you find is the department heads, and in the federal government's case, the cabinet heads, you know, they've done, in most cases, that means you're going to find stuff, but it's not, at the end of the day, given the size of the budget, it's not enough to quote unquote reduce the federal deficit.
It's a start. That's one aspect, but you need to grow the economy. What I would like to see, and this is what President Trump mentioned in his national security strategy, is get innovation back in, do tax reform, so we can empower the small business owner to start a business. He mentioned banking regulation. Dodd-Frank crippled the banking sector, especially the small regional banks that ran out because of the compliance. I was at a bank yesterday doing something for my brother's estate, and they're getting crippled by the banking regulation that came in under Dodd-Frank. All these things hurt the American economy. I know Donald Trump, it was a couple weeks ago, they were fighting against the Consumer Protection Board. This came out of the Dodd-Frank, which is no oversight, no accountability, but they hammer the business community for the so-called, we're protecting the consumer, but really, at reality, they're pushing their own ideology, and it's crippling business.
All right, let me see if I can play just a couple of outtakes from his speech. And the president again gave his speech yesterday. His national security strategy. And so we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that with John Ubaldi. He had the Ubaldi reports, and let me see if I can tee this up. Is there anything in the speech that surprised you?
No, nothing surprised me. But he did. He mentioned, just called everybody out, didn't hold no punches. And the one thing that changed over the last 8 years is he mentioned the jihadist threat. He's starting to use that word where we were never able to use that word before.
Yeah.
It was always extremist or whatever. He called it out as it was.
Yeah. Yeah. No, when you're leading from behind, you don't do those things.
No, you don't do those things.
Yeah. So anyway, all right, here's from yesterday's speech. Here's a few cuts from it.
Let me begin.
All right. Here he is.
Washington State. We are closely monitoring the situation and coordinating with local authorities. It is all the more reason why we must start immediately fixing the infrastructure of the United States. We're here today to discuss matters of vital importance to us all, America's security, prosperity, and standing in the world. I want to talk about where we've been, where we are now, and finally, our strategy for where we are going in the years ahead. Over the past 11 months, I have traveled tens of thousands of miles to visit 13 countries. I have met with more than 100 world leaders. I have carried America's message to a grand hall in Saudi Arabia, a great square in Warsaw, to the General Assembly of the United Nations, and to the seat of democracy on the Korean Peninsula. Everywhere I traveled, it was my highest privilege and greatest honor to represent the American people. Throughout our history, the American people have always been the true source of American greatness. Our people have promoted our culture and promoted our values. Americans have fought and sacrificed on the battlefields all over the world. We have liberated captive nations, transformed former enemies into the best of friends, and lifted entire regions of the planet from poverty to prosperity. because of our people, America has been among the greatest forces for peace and justice in the history of the world. The American people are generous. You are determined, you are brave, you are strong, and you are wise.
Okay, so pretty basic boilerplate from the president up to that point. The all right, and then let me cut to a little bit further into this. All right, there you go.
And we are seeing the response we fully expected. Economic growth has topped 3% for two quarters in a row. GDP growth, which is way ahead of schedule under my administration, will be one of America's truly greatest weapons. Optimism has surged. Confidence has returned. With this new confidence, we are also bringing back clarity to our thinking. We are reasserting these fundamental truths. A nation without borders is not a nation.
Okay, I thought this was, when I heard him say this, I thought this little, these sentences were the most powerful. This is just me. I thought these were the most powerful of the speech.
A nation that does not protect prosperity at home cannot protect its interests abroad. A nation that is not prepared to win a war is a nation not capable of preventing a war. A nation that is not proud of its history cannot be confident in its future. And a nation that is not certain of its values cannot summon the will to defend them. Today, grounded in these truths, we are presenting to the world our new national security strategy. Based on my direction, this document has been in development for over a year. It has the endorsement of my entire cabinet. Our new strategy is based on a principled realism, guided by our vital national interests and rooted in our timeless values. This strategy recognizes that whether we like it or not, we are engaged in a new era of competition. We accept that vigorous military, economic, and political contests are now playing out all around the world. We face rogue regimes that threaten the United States and our allies. We face terrorist organizations, transnational criminal networks, and others who spread violence and evil around the globe.
All right, we're going to go bounce one more time. So I thought it was him laying out the linkage between these different pieces of what national security is. It just isn't the Department of Defense. And then
correct.
One more thing that I thought was pretty powerful.
Third pillar of our strategy is to preserve peace through strength. We recognize that weakness is the surest path to conflict, and unrivaled power is the most certain means of defense. For this reason, our strategy breaks from the damaging defense sequester. We're going to get rid of that. It calls for a total modernization of our military and reversing previous decisions to shrink our armed forces, even as threats to national security grew. It calls for streamlining acquisition, eliminating bloated bureaucracy, and massively building up our military, which has the fundamental side benefit of creating millions and millions of jobs. This strategy includes plans to counter modern threats, such as cyber and electromagnetic attacks. It recognizes space as a competitive domain and calls for multi-layered missile defense.
All right. The My guest this morning, Master Guns, John Ubaldi. John, again, a lot of things he's talked about, but this is just me. When you know who the principals were that had some input into this, I think that you see the work of Mattis, you see the work of the Chief of Staff, certainly, and the Chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff, because they would see this very much as an integrated, our national security integrated across the board into all of these elements. And that the nation and the world needs a strong United States. Because if it's not the United States, then who is it? China? Russia? I mean, God help everybody else if that's what happens. Your thoughts on any of that?
Well, but that's exactly what the former Danish Prime Minister and the former Secretary General of NATO had said. He goes, he wrote a book called The Will to Lead. He said that the United States is the only country who can provide this. But with this national security strategy, this was based off a realistic national security strategy where we're looking at what is growing around the world. It's not all rainbows and unicorns. This is what is reality. This is what the world we face, whether domestically and foreign or globally, and he's addressing a strategy to confront our challenges with the U.S. economy and what's going on with around the globe. Principally, we have threats from Iran, China, Russia, and he recognizes that these are threats to the world order that was established after World War II. And United States needs to be engaged around the world with our allies, but a strong economic and military power of the United States prevents conflicts that we don't want to get involved in.
And that restraint, honestly, that restraint is huge. I mean, again, think about if, and I'll just quote General Zinni. Think about if we would have gone to Iraq, if we would have gone to Afghanistan, whacked in overwhelming numbers, whacked bin Laden, and not let him escape, right? And then told the Taliban, and then said, look, we don't want that shithole. You know, they can have it. Just warn them. Hey, if you sneeze and we don't like it, we're coming back. And we're gonna rip a new hole in your ass, okay? And then we leave. And we stay in oversight. Like, we're gonna watch. And if we don't like it, trust us, we're coming back. So you better get it together. But we don't want to own Afghanistan. Okay? We don't want that. So then we leave there. Then people will say, well, you mean you're just gonna knock it over and then leave? Well, let me just tell you, the Democrats, after how many years we had been in Afghanistan, 13, 14, that's what they wanted to do after we'd spent all that money and all those lives. They were willing to walk away from it. So why wouldn't you knock it over, warn them, and leave, and leave them to their own devices? I think that's a better course of action, if you want my own personal opinion. And then let's just say that smarter people were involved in the decision relative to Iraq. And more guys like Zinni and Newbold said, no, we're not going to do this. Just as we contain the Soviet Union, we can contain these idiots. Okay? And so we'll do that. We choose that we'll contain them. Look at all the money that we'd have. I won't even talk about the lives, but look at all the money that I want to say, yeah. I want to say it's something like $6 trillion. Hello?
No, it's, the problem is America in the last so many years has been providing a strategy, a tactical strategy. We're not looking long term.
Well, but again, I say those things though to kind of dovetail off your point about being very deliberate about the conflicts that you decide to get into, because they don't go as planned. They're not tidy like Desert Storm is. Desert Storm is a historical anomaly. Okay? It's a historical anomaly. It does not happen like that.
So, no, it does not happen like that. But even Winston Churchill, I'll paraphrase a comment he made, he goes, woe unto the individuals when you get into a war, because you never know how that's going to turn out. So once you start something, it has a life of its own.
Right.
And he was right. I mean, we went into Iraq and we never planned for all the other intricacies after that.
Well, No. You're not right. The war plan, everything that happened in Iraq was planned for in the war plan. But you had a Secretary of Defense who tore the war plan up and wrote his own plan.
So we did
plan for it. We just didn't we didn't execute anything close to what we planned for. So it's just again, it's disgusting when you think about that. And that idiot was on somebody's TV show the other day. Every time I see him, it makes me just want to punch him right in the mouth. His arrogant, snarky ass.
Well, and that's the point. The one word you just used, his arrogant attitude, caused major problems. He was extremely arrogant. Didn't listen. He didn't take the Eisenhower model of how to run a national security strategy. I mean, Eisenhower prevented the United States from getting into war. It was in 1955, General Matthew Ridgway was adamant against going into Vietnam, and Eisenhower listened to him because of the plans he laid out. It's going to take this many troops, this time, and he was like, okay, we're not doing it.
Right.
Had the next two administrations listened, we may not have gotten into Vietnam.
Well, and again, the point is, and I think that's why, I mean, he's got smart guys around him, and I'm fortunate to know him, but those decisions to not go are huge decisions, or to go and because look at all the progress that was made against ISIS without American troops, you know, standing in the front lines and coming home in coffins. You know, we found another way to do that, evidently. Interesting. So, okay, let's go back to the speech. I'll give you one last crack. Anything that surprised you in the speech?
No, nothing surprised me. It was just a straightforward what he said on the campaign trail, what he said since then. There's nothing that surprised me. Now, I read the analysis from Anthony Courtesman from the Center for Strategic International Study. He seemed to like it. The only critique he had, there was not much detail. And, okay, we defeated ISIS and the jihadist threat, let's say, in the Middle East. What comes next?
Right.
To provide, the governance and some of these other problems. So that was the only critique.
Well, that's because nobody knows, right? I mean,
well, that's it.
Right.
But that's the only critique he did come up with was that. But he did like it. He goes, hey, he hasn't said anything. He's just mannerisms is a little unorthodox, but it's no different than American way. We're going to lead. We're going to be involved. We're going to engage around the world. We're going to work with our allies. There's nothing earth-shattering. He just, this is what we're going to do, and he was straightforward about it. But I did like he put in a preeminence on the economic side. That's the strength of America is our economy.
Yeah, what he did better than I've ever seen him do it before is he tied it together better.
I'd agree.
Yeah, that's what in the macro sense, he showed the linkage between these things. If you don't secure your border, right, you can't be this. If you don't have a strong national defense, you can't be this. If you can't guarantee this, then you can't do that in terms of, international economics. And you can't be a leader, I would say. If you're not doing that, you are deteriorating as a superpower. You're not able to lead. And so maybe Barack Obama's deal is to lead from behind, not to get out in front and lead it. But he did huge harm. Again, I've said this repeatedly, but he did huge harm to the nation. And we just found out late last week about the investigations into Hezbollah. That was part of the Iranian deal.
That came out yesterday. That came out on Sunday, Monday.
Are you kidding me?
That was like, you got to be nuts.
Yeah. Now, I don't know, again, I don't know how much truth there is to that. Hopefully not a whole lot, but you're reading it and you're going, you got to be, come on, man.
Well, Trey Gowdy, who's the chairman of the House Oversight Committee, he was asked that question. He goes, listen, I know that's a news article, but it's something for us to look into. But that was part and parcel of the whole Iran nuclear deal. He pushed everything aside to get that agreement. And we all know that agreement is one of the worst pieces of agreement, at least in the modern era. I mean, it gave everything up front.
All right. Okay. All right. All right. Any final thoughts on the speech before I let you go?
No, I would just think it was straightforward. I mean, it's got to be a little bit more. This will be after some of the things we need to do, like after ISIS and all that stuff. But it was straightforward, and it emphasized strong American economy with a strong America and engaged America abroad working with their allies.
The reason, first of all, he's not a detailed guy in terms of the speeches that he gives. You're not going to hear, you're going to hear the details from his cabinet secretaries, not from Donald Trump. He's going to do the major, blue arrow announcement. Then after that, I think the reason that, again, the reason that he's not giving any details is that in Iraq, we're going to fight with Iran again for what happens in Iraq. And I don't know that, you want to get in a position where you want to put people on blast with that. And so I'll make this final point. I think though what people are telling him is with increased spending in the military, right? And our military, coming back to what it historically has been, right? With the economy moving in the direction that it is. Right. The message that you're sending to around the world to everybody, not through speeches, mind you, not through sloganeering. The message that you're sending is we're back, we're strong, right? And we will be a vigorous, tough, good partner. That buys you more goodwill around the world than anything you could ever do. So I think that's what he's hearing.
No, I would agree with that. My father used to say that. It's not what you say, it's what you do. It's our action. The economy's growing. The world sees that. And granted, you just didn't have a lot of details, but that's not the place to put the details. That's for another time and place. And he's not going to dictate to our enemy when we're going to leave and when we're not going to leave and what we're going to do. Which we've had in the previous administration, where they telegraphed everything.
Right. Yeah, you don't hear too much.
And it's just a whole different approach. These are my actions, and I'm going to back them up.
Yeah, the DOD doesn't have too many press conferences.
No, they just, and General Mattis, the one thing I like about his national security team, they don't need to be patted on the back. They don't need to look at me, look at what I said. They just do their job. They're behind the scenes, and it's, you don't really hear much from General Mattis or General McMattis. They're on an interview, but they don't need to be patted on the back and, oh, you're doing a great job. They don't need all that crap.
All right. Anything else going on? What are you going to do for Christmas?
I'm just going to be with friends out here and enjoy the nice 80-degree weather.
Yeah, now... Nice weather in Florida now because you don't get the humidity, right?
No, you don't have the humidity. Now, your kids are coming home, right?
No. We're going to be split up a little bit.
But you at least have your daughters home, right?
No, my daughters and my oldest son's coming home with his wife and our grandson, so they're going to be here for Christmas, so fired up about that. But yeah, now this time of the year in Florida, once you get to the fall, the humidity kind of blows out, and it's why people live there. Okay, it's good.
Yeah, the fall and the spring are the best. Summer's a little bit warm.
A little bit humid. Okay, a little bit
humid. Just a tad.
All right, tell everybody where they can find your work.
You can go to UvaldiReports.com, or you can go to Facebook and just type in Uvalde Reports, and there I'll be.
All right. John Uvalde, Master Gunner, Sergeant United States Marine Corps, retired. Have a good, if I don't talk to you, have a Merry Christmas.
You do the same. Have a Merry Christmas. Enjoy time with your family.
Awesome. All right. All right, bud. Semper Fidelis.
All right. All right. Semper Fidelis.
There you have it, John Ubaldi. We'll take another break. More of Amarine Radio coming up next. We'll check a few news headlines on our way to the top of the hour. And then Montana Man, yeah, going to join us. So we'll talk about his really expensive truck. Pretty irresponsible for him to spend all that money, but he did it anyway. So we'll talk about that and find out what's going on in Montana. And we'll get a weather report. Yeah, no snow around here. This is going to... Or this snow's going to be on the ground for the rest of the winter. It was 42 degrees, headed for 50-something the other day. Right. Good instincts, Montana man. All right, more of Amarine Radio coming up next. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military? For a first responder? For a hunter? For an outdoorsman? Or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum, it's milled machined, and a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. BattleMug.com. You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. I didn't even have time to catch my breath this morning. It's 8:55 on a Tuesday, last Tuesday before Christmas. Yeah, you've got five shopping days and a wake-up. Don't be afraid to shop on Christmas Eve. It's pretty fun. Yeah, in fact, it's really fun. We're going to check some news headlines out. Interesting little story in the Marine Corps Times this morning. In fact, there's a whole series of interesting stories. All right. First one is EA Promotion Board delayed for weeks. after the board was dismissed early. More than 1,500 Marines will have to wait until the new year to find out if they have been promoted to from Master Sergeant or to Master Sergeant or First Sergeant. Following an investigation into a potential irregularity during the conduct of the E-8 portion of the FY18 Sergeant Major through Master Sergeant Promotion Selection Board, the Commandant of the Marine Corps directed the board be reconstituted with new members who will meet in 2018 to conduct the E-8 portion. Marine Corps did not specify what the irregularity was. Interesting. Another story about Colonel David P. O'Hara. He was a Marine Corps commanding officer of Marine Corps Engineering School. This story was in the news during the summer. He was fired on June 6 after officials determined that the command climate wasn't just toxic, it was dangerous. Colonel O'Hara was fired by training command leader Brigadier General Jason Bohm. Bohm was a student of mine at IOC for a loss of trust and confidence in his ability to serve in command. A redacted copy of the command investigation into issues that the Equal Opportunity Office found at the school from May 31st to June 2nd was obtained by Marine Corps Times through a Freedom of Information Act. Though personal interviews with the investigating officer, just about everyone interviewed thought the CO belittled, demeaned, and showed displeasure to some members of his staff either through comments or minor physical actions, such as throwing a pen or papers onto a desk or table. While the CO created a toxic command climate through extremely unprofessional behavior and utilizing excessive meetings and reporting requirements ultimately caused working stagnation, he did not haze, harass, or threaten the staff verbally or through shows of force, or no further investigation should be pursued. So he was relieved. He's done. Marine Corps helicopter snafu, the second one in a week in Okinawa. That was human error. It fell out because the window was not properly secured. You would come to that conclusion pretty easily, right? You would make sure that the window, if you found it, was it still functioning? You look at the frame. Is there any damage to the frame? What's the only other reason that window would jump out of a moving CH-53 helicopter? Yeah, and that was somebody didn't do their job pre-flight check and make sure the window was secured. It turns into an international incident. Device would kind of an interesting little thing here. When bullets are flying and a service member needs treatment, a combat medic can't be worried about taking notes. But knowing what happened and how a patient was treated helps their future treatment, and it can assist wounded warriors when claiming disability. Oh, man. Researchers at Clemson University are working on a hands-free system for medics to document battlefield care and ensure troops can receive benefits they deserve. That's asking a bit much, isn't it, boys? Yeah, look, I know the VA needs their documentation, but the corpsman or the medic, they're a little bit tied up. My own opinion, a little bit wrong-headed. All right, we're going to take a break. Montana Man is going to join us. He's standing by. So on a Tuesday, more of All Marine Radio coming up next. So whatever you do, don't touch that dial.